I am your host, William Grant. I have been running a solar company here in Peoria for 6 years, and we have helped thousands of people go solar. I've been in the industry for going on 12 years now.
My name is Austin Baer. I'm your co-host here at the Solar Power Hour. I'm your local solar consultant here from Peoria. I've been in this industry for going on about 5 years. I've had the pleasure of helping a little over 400 families go solar here in the local community.
Welcome to another episode of the Solar Power Hour. Your host, William Grant, and this is our 17th episode, and we have the one, the only, the amazing Alex Carmona, city councilman and artist extraordinaire. World renowned, I hear.
That's what they say. Thank you for having me.
That's what they say. So yeah, man. So you were recently on the Peoria City Council.
Yeah, it's been a few months now. Got sworn in May. Mm-hmm. Ran the whole campaign last year. I really appreciate your support as well. And you know this, but maybe the viewers don't, but moved here from Colorado 6 years ago now. Mm-hmm. Really fell in love with the city and found it to be a really unique city too, because even though we were born and raised in Colorado and we have a lot of friends there, the people we've met here, the connections we've made, I don't know, there's something really special about this city. So my wife and I both wanted to be more involved and try to, help Peoria's potential, come to light, because it has a lot of potential. And I think that it's just a matter of time before, more and more people start moving to Peoria.
Absolutely. We got here around the same time and became friends a few years back, but I completely understand what you're saying. It really is about the people here, and it has been really cool to see it, from the ground up, from the last 5-6 years, and how much the city's changed and how much downtown is trying, how much like new people such as yourself and myself are coming in with new ideas and really trying to build this place up. So it's, I share a similar passion and love for this place.
Yeah. And cities have ups and downs, states do, localities, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. What happened in Colorado the past 15, 20 years was pretty crazy. Everywhere in Colorado is very popular to live in. Mm-hmm. Now, but it wasn't always that way. So sometimes it takes just a spark. Right now, I think the unfortunate spark, which is going to benefit Peoria in a lot of ways, is that the cost of living everywhere is really high. Yeah. And the cost of living in Peoria is actually not. And on top of that, we have a beautiful river. We have a lot of cool things to do here, people would always ask me right when I moved here, like, hey, why would you move to Peoria? Like, don't you go like skiing every day, fishing, hiking, all this stuff? And no, most people, in Colorado, if you live in the mountains, you're like a crazy person or very rich and you don't live there all the time.
Right.
Most people live along the foothills, and it takes a long time to drive up to some of these trails to go skiing. You can do all this stuff here. I mean, there's plenty of hiking trails, there's plenty of outdoor stuff, even skiing, You can go to, what's that town called?
I don't know, I've never been, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Ulysses S. Grant is from there, that's all I remember. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll think of the name. But yeah, no, you can do everything here. So it's kind of a hidden gem here. It's interesting because it's like you get the city feel from our downtown, yeah. But you can have a suburban feel too if you want it. And I really love the history here too. There's a lot of cool old houses, definitely more than there was in Colorado, because obviously, the state of Illinois was settled way before the West was. So
absolutely. Well, it's Peoria settled by the French, right?
Yeah, that's right.
French Canadians.
Fort Crèvecoeur. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I learned something too. it's a pleasure to have you on. And for those of you watching and been watching the podcast, this table that we sit before you, this is actually created by Alex. He, short artist and has a ton of art around our office. This is actually just like a museum to him and this space, but he makes some really cool stuff. And he's a very good friend. And, unfortunately, he doesn't have solar on his house, covered in trees on Moss Avenue. So it's not the best fit in the world for solar.
I want to, but
it definitely would be a challenge.
Yeah, but you called it a long time ago. You're telling me a year and a half ago that rates are just going to keep going up, and that's the sad truth. It's unfortunate that a lot of public policy, I guess on the state level, it has really stifled the ability to create power in the state, mm-hmm. Shutting plants down and I think it's unfortunate that, you know, even though I'm a fan of like the idea of obviously progress and human nature and all this stuff. I think it's probably best if we give ourselves realistic expectations as to how we can change things that we've been doing, mm-hmm. and such big industries that are already established. You know, change takes a lot of time, and so when you try to force it through, we get results like we have now.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've been that's one of the reasons why we chose Illinois and why we moved here in the first place, is we saw what the program was going to entail and how quickly they wanted to implement all this. Trying to go 100% renewable from 2019 to 2050 in 30 years is just, that's a ton of power. And no one could have, you know, predicted what's happening with the AI data centers and the increase in consumption of power with EVs and how many of those would be on the road. And, you know, we have this standard to get 1 million EVs on the road by 2030, go 100% renewable, shut down all the coal plants, nuclear stations. And we're here for the people to make that adjustment and never have to be at the mercy of a state or power company or power supplier. And, you know, it's tragic, really, because we're getting to that point where their power bills are taking them and dropping their credit, right? When your power bill goes from 300 and you own a fixed income, now it's 600, like, how do you pay it? Throw it on a credit card. And it just gets worse and worse, because at the end of the day, when you're looking at just a basic supply and demand curve, man, you're going 30% more increase in consumption is predicted by 2030, and that's across the U.S. 30% more consumption, which is insane. And then we don't have any way to produce this power, especially the federal government trying to stifle solar. And solar has been the most prominent source of power we put onto the grid, which is amazing. And obviously that's with help of the federal tax credits and whatnot. But at the end of the day, you know, it's just a piece of the puzzle. And I'm a big, you know, believer in free market. And, you know, if it works, it works, and it's safe for the people. We should have nuclear, coal, solar, wind, everything should work together. And the fact that it becomes political blows my freaking mind, man. I that's one of my least favorite things about the industry, is the political aspect of it.
Yeah, look, let's be honest. Every industry, everything, every part of your life is regulated, from the food you eat, the clothes you wear, the products you buy for your house, the products you build your house with, the car you get in, everything is regulated to the nth degree. And what's unfortunate about this, and especially talking about like energy and stuff like that, is that who does it end up hurting? It hurts regular working people.
Absolutely.
The people who have the means, you know, it's a minor inconvenience that things are a little more expensive, but they can weather the storm. But for a majority of America, I mean, policies like this really, really hurt poor and middle class people.
Absolutely.
And it's something that we need to start getting away from. I'm a huge free market person. I believe that that we as citizens are very powerful in the way we vote, by the way we use our dollars, like who we support, the things that work, the things that don't. If an industry comes up or a product or whatever, you know, let the free market decide whether it's viable or not, you know. And also over time, things almost regulate themselves without government interference. You know, the government is very heavy-handed in like protecting citizens, but it always comes at the cost of making everything way more expensive,
right?
You know? And so for me, I would like to get back to a form of government where it's what our founders intended, where it's limited, you know, that's no longer the case in any way. This country is founded on, you know, limited government, liberty for individuals. And now our government is the biggest organization in the history of the world. I mean, think about that. That's crazy. And so, you know, the unfortunate thing, like I said, is, and it comes back down to the regular citizen, and it really impacts them negatively. And whether they know it or not, it is all this government intervention around the world, the way the government intervenes in your own life. I mean, I want to live in a world where citizens can be who they want to be, where we respect each other, and where the government respects that too, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, it would be a beautiful world we would live in. And
wild idea, huh?
Yeah, wild idea, and stay out of affairs of other countries and all the different things. And
absolutely.
You're right. It does hurt the middle class. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's two options we had. You could either go up on the hill and protest the idea of even going solar in the first place, or we can help people make a switch, because we just saw it coming. It's gotten so bad now, and it's going to get so much worse. We're still way cheaper than California in price point for power. We were just looking at, Austin brought a design to me yesterday. It was a car wash, right? And he's using quite a bit of power for that car wash. And then, you know, that doubled, you know, over the last year, and then it's going to double again, probably in the next year or two. And it's like, well, how do you charge someone an exuberant amount of money for a car wash? And, you know, then it comes down to inflation. Then it's going to be down to that consumer. Now they're paying more for car washes. Same thing with businesses. You know, there's a lot of businesses that run on a thin margin, like 10%, 8%. And then part of that margin or part of your total overall cost is a huge part of that's power, and you're manufacturing something, you know, that doubles. Then you have to either charge more or you're losing profits. You're paying people less. Like, it's just trickle down effect of really painful experiences for people. And I think we experienced that here too with our taxes.
And it's all self-imposed. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of everything you're talking about is completely self-imposed through regulation. You know, when I was running my campaign, I think a lot of people who didn't really know who I am, and maybe this is probably my own fault for messaging in a certain way, but I really am for working class people. Mm-hmm. I, through the study of history and government and economics, have a really good foundation as to decisions to make, policies to support and policies to run away from, because I know how much it is going to actually impact the general public. And, you know, you can't really reinvent the wheel when it comes to all these policies. All this stuff has been tried before. Taxation, money does not solve the problem in government. Mm-hmm. The government is not an entity that is creative in its thinking, that wants to truly solve problems. The government is riddled with bureaucracy. It is riddled with all these different levels of people that say no. And now we live in an era where a lot of people rely on this big government, you know? So when you say things like, let's try to get back to something that is closer to a free market, people kind of run away from that because they're almost like, they're almost taught that that is something scary because we're going to live in a world that is dangerous because big old government daddy isn't here to protect us, you know? And it's just simply not the truth. You know, the market has a really good mechanism of regulating itself, and that is actually the consumer.
Absolutely. Yeah, very true. And, you know, you're talking about government. I love how fast this episode got demonetized. And every time we're going to put this on Facebook and they're going to shut it down every single time. Because even just uttering the word government and politics, it's a no.
Sorry, that's my fault.
No, it's all good. I knew it was going to happen. I didn't even worry about it. But, you know, we saw that the backroom deals and the good old buddy system, you know, throughout the big, beautiful bill. And, you know, we're actively trying to fight for solar to stay around or the federal tax credit. Because one thing I do enjoy about the tax credit, because we don't do the leasing and we're not buying and selling these tax credits, the homeowner is actually getting tax dollars they would have put, you know, to the government back into their home. So like, it feels like a win-win in my opinion. But a lot of the backroom deals and a lot of these, you know, states, they're, you know, far right leaning. At the end of the day, there is, I think, $9 billion to $10 billion of solar manufacturing that's already been pulled out. Tens of thousands of jobs already been pulled out. And it's like that really helps stimulate these, you know, more rural places to have these manufacturing facilities because they have tax havens in those states and whatnot. But I don't think people take a look at the whole picture. I think that's really just what can I do for you or what am I going to get out of it? And it's sad to see that we've gotten there. And you know, some of these politicians that have been in office for decades, you know, they really for you at this point, or are they really trying to make change and do something creative? But it's sad to see where, you know, the world's kind of heading and what the government's doing nowadays, whether it be state or fed. And I completely agree. I think there's too much oversight from the ground up, or even city, hell, the city of Peoria.
Every step of the way in a country that was supposed to be founded off of the ideas of liberty, every step you take is, you know, the government wants more and more control over everything. Mm-hmm. It's just simply not, it just simply doesn't work well with the idea of liberty at all. And so it is really unfortunate too, because you talk about backroom deals and all this stuff. I don't think many people realize, if you look into a lot of these, you know, a lot of these policies or the way that regulations change, they're actually developed and you know, promoted by the industries that are being regulated. So for example, here's an easy one that people could understand is that, you know, the minimum wage, if you think of something like that. Opponents of the minimum wage are places like Walmart and Amazon. Mm-hmm. They want, you know, they want to increase the minimum wage. So to the regular, you know, person that's listening to this type of stuff, you see that and you're like, hey, Walmart, Amazon, they're for the, mm-hmm. they want to help us. Well, I don't know if that's true. If mm-hmm. you actually think about it, you know, we still live in a world of, you know, of capitalism, meaning there is competition. Mm-hmm. But this is a sneaky way to compete with people because Amazon and Walmart can afford to pay minimum wage. Mm-hmm. You know who can't afford to pay minimum wage or an increased minimum wage is the mom and pop store down the street, right. The restaurants, all big industry loves to regulate itself mm-hmm. to keep competitors out. And if you look at a lot of the regulations that we have, federally especially, they've all been underwritten by big corporations, big industry, the same entities that, you know, they're actually regulating. Mm-hmm. So it's like, imagine if you're a business owner and you go to the government and say, hey, you should regulate me more. It's like, how much sense does that make, right?
Yeah.
But it's for a reason. It's to stifle competition and growth. And mm-hmm. so that's why, like, people like to say that we live in a capitalist, you know, country. I mean, it's a crony capitalist system. It is rigged. And we need to get back to a system where people vote with their dollar and everybody has an equal playing field.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot agree more. We experienced that in the solar industry and electrical contracting in general, because there's been some talks and studies about this, but there's, you know, we're missing a generation essentially because we, you know, our parents taught us, hey, go to college, do something, be bigger and better. And so there's what's happening is these old experienced guys in the trades are retiring or dropping off or quitting or whatever. And there's nowhere to teach this youth. And so there's a huge deficit of the tradesmen out there starting to pick up a little bit in the last years. But it's really tragic because now, like, some of these installers and electricians across the board in the industry are grossly overpaid. You know, I heard recently in Texas, they'll pay somebody $41 an hour just to start trying to do electrical contracting. And that's insane. Right. Because then who's actually benefiting from that? Well, besides the guy who's getting grossly overpaid, you know, the homeowners or whoever they're servicing are getting charged out the wazoo. And, you know, that's a lot of capital, and employment is huge. And it's affected us and our cost for our product because our wages have to be so dang high just to compete. And it's insane.
Yeah. I'm going to go down a rabbit hole with you, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
so
let's go.
Because of what you're talking about, I mean, should people get paid a livable wage? I'd say, yeah. I mean, I think we could all probably agree on that. Mm-hmm. I think you can make an argument for, like, entry-level jobs, you know, jobs that high school students would have or whatever, mm-hmm. bussing tables. You know, these aren't careers people are going to make. So I understand getting into the, into the workforce, mm-hmm. starting to get experience, and then, you know, moving up and up and up from there. You know, so I understand things like that. The crazy thing about that I don't think a lot of people think about is that, you know, the amount you get paid, the reason that everything costs so much more money now is because of inflation. Mm-hmm. People don't understand, though, that, you know, people like to point the finger at things that cause inflation, mm-hmm. like greedy bosses, mm-hmm. right? Like labor unions, all these things. Inflation is manufactured in Washington, D.C. at the Federal Reserve, okay? Because if your government has a monopoly over your money supply, mm-hmm. if they can willy-nilly print dollars out of thin air, and now it's not even printing, they just add it to a screen, right?
Right.
It's all, you know.
It's screw a pin.
It's even easier now, right? Exactly. What ends up happening is that the minute all this brand new money starts mingling with the existing money in an economy, mm-hmm. what looks like higher prices is actually a diminishing of your buying power from your dollar. Mm-hmm. So from the minute central banks get installed, like the Federal Reserve, and there's central banks everywhere in the world, everybody uses funny money and it's all a ticking time bomb. Mm-hmm. And this is why we have these up and down cycles in our economy, is that when your money can be manipulated, then the government can endlessly fund things and live outside of its means, right? And, you know, going to war becomes profitable. The pharmaceutical industry, all these different things become very profitable, and the and government influence with big corporations. I mean, all of these things lead to inflation, but it starts with our government. Like, have you ever asked yourself, you know, you watch movies and some, you know, black and white movie, and this kid will go buy like a bottle of Coke for 5 cents. That was real.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now ask yourself, is the, you know, what has changed? Is the Coke different now? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they don't put, you know, let's not go to that. Okay. Maybe it's a little different, but overall it's the same.
Should be cheaper.
Right. But now that Coke that used to cost 5 cents mm-hmm. now costs you $2.50.
Right.
Is it because the Coke is that much better? No, it's because your money is worth so much less than it was before.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the reason why a carpenter back at the turn of the century or in the 20s or whatever could have 6-7 kids. His wife didn't work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was able to buy a house, you know, because his dollar, his money was powerful. Mm-hmm. The minute you take that power away from citizens, which is what has happened since the inception of our Federal Reserve and getting off of a sound money standard mm-hmm. like gold, then the government can willy-nilly just endlessly inflate the currency and extract money from the people through the hidden tax of inflation.
Absolutely. And it's when you talk about the carpenter analogy too, it's the workmanship, right? Too. We use so many cheap mass produced materials now. And, you know, Obed and Isaac's, for instance, I think it cost them $100,000+ to build that. And it's immaculate, right?
Right.
That's just.
Try building that again. Yeah, right.
What's the replacement cost for a massive cathedral, essentially?
And to your point earlier about where we are as a workforce too, mm-hmm. where are the artisans that can actually do that anymore?
Absolutely.
The tradesmen. I mean, we can build nice, big, modern buildings, but mm-hmm. when you talk about something like that or things that people built in the old world, you know, in Europe, I mean, that's a dying craft now, which is really unfortunate.
It really is. I mean, speaking of dying craft, the man who builds tables that shouldn't exist did an amazing job on this. But yeah, it really is. So it's hard to find someone who's as passionate or works as hard as you do, or, you know, some of the people that we surround ourselves with. And it's becoming a dying breed. And, you know, talking about artisans, even in the electrical contracting realm, like, you know, people taking pride in their work. We've been through quite a few electricians and installers who just didn't give a crap how it looked or the things that would never be seen, how they were hidden. Like, just a little, what we found our company on and our, you know, our standards so high, I get it, but it seems like it's very, very achievable. And, you know, on the flip side of that, just troubleshooting, finding someone who has enough critical thinking ability to go and troubleshoot any system, no matter what equipment is installed. It's damn near impossible. It's like takes years and years of training to like get to a point, which is wild. Like that critical thinking aspect coming out of the world nowadays is just diminishing, and it really hurts.
Some parts of it too feel like it's almost like it's calculated or mm-hmm. it's unintended consequences of maybe technology. Right. But at the end of the day, you know, if you look at, you know, you've met my kids, obviously mm-hmm. they love you. They call him uncle, by the way. So I'm sure you realize that my kids are a lot different than other kids.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we still raise them kind of like our parents raised us. Like we hold them accountable. We teach them to be respectful. Mm-hmm. We teach them to talk to people. We teach them the skills of socializing, how to save money, how to be an adult, things like that. If you walk around now if you go to any restaurant, you see a family sitting down. I mean, a lot of them are just playing on their phones. They take their tablet for their little kids to, you know, to basically be raised by this, by technology. And so we unfortunately live in a very interesting era where I think people are starting to pick up on that and notice it, how it's negatively impacting the different generations that are growing up. Mm-hmm. And we have to, in my opinion, get back to, you know, technology is good. I'm not saying it's, you know, I have nothing against technology. But for the parents out there, you know, you have a kid, you have a huge responsibility to prepare them for this world. And everything that I just stated about the way we raise our kids is a huge part of that. And I think also what you were talking about earlier, the kind of paradigm that we lived in where you're a parent and you say you just have to go to college no matter what to your kids. I was raised in that generate, you know, in that era. And I think a lot of people still think that way. And I have a lot of friends who went and got a degree, spent a ton of money getting a loan and all this stuff to get their degree in, joined the workforce late in debt with no experience. And it, a lot of them aren't even using their degree for, you know, for what they're doing for work now. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to have a really honest conversation about things like the trades. Mm-hmm. Like, I teach all my kids how to use the table saw, how to, mm-hmm. you know, how just to build stuff, how to fix stuff, because not only is it a good skill to have, but, you know, if this is something you're inclined to do, there's mm-hmm. a super good path for you to make great money, absolutely. Earn an honest living, and, you know, get by in this world.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're familiar with marketing and all these different things that you picked up over the years. And it's something where, you know, just it is crazy. Like, one of the biggest challenges I have currently is the workforce, and then the, you know, the people who go set up deployments, the people who knock doors, like Fabian has been on our podcast. The personal, like, connection that they have with people is diminished. The, like, the fear that they have that just talking to a stranger is so big, and it's so hard to get even people to come in for an interview. And especially if you're going to say, hey, look, you're going to be talking to, you know, 80 people a day or whatever, just like, you can see the fear set in. And it's mm-hmm. like the personability aspect is just maddening to me. And I think part of it's to blame with social media and culture and stuff, but it's just that instant gratification that everybody, you know, expects. And looping back to the money talk. So I just got back from Burning Man. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm a little bit of a hippie. but yeah, I just got back, and it, you know, everybody there was from LA, San Francisco, or New York. Like, that was it. And they all were very clicky. They all knew each other, all venture capital and whatnot. But the amount of money, when you get deep in these conversations that they're raising, it doesn't feel real. Like, you're talking about $50 million raise here, $150 million raise here. Like, the amount of money those people have raised, which is, it seems they're not touching anything, not building anything. A lot is just conceptual or projects that'll fail, but that money's still invested, and then investors lose out. But when you start to, like, just see around the room how much money is getting moved around, it blows your freaking mind, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, it's interesting. So we live in a world where if you save your money, if you put your money in a bank account, mm-hmm. you're like a sucker, because say you have $10,000 in 2020, if you had $10,000 in your bank account, that money, that same $10,000 is worth like 45% less. Right. So what is the government the general public promote you to do? Go gamble it. But mm-hmm. you put it in the stock market. Mm-hmm. It's speculation. And I understand that that's a mechanism for growth, mm-hmm. right? Like, that is that's something that's been around for a very long time. But I'm telling you, when you just think about the working man and woman, the, you know, the poor and the middle class, these are people that cannot do that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they are relegated to trying to save their money, mm-hmm. Or, you know, potentially trying to acquire property, you know, and trying to grow wealth that way. Mm-hmm. But the stock market is not open to everybody, you know?
Very true. And it feels like a trap. Like you said, you're right. You put $100 in the bank account and it's probably worth $60 a few years down the road with the inflation, especially if it keeps on the way it is. And mm-hmm. it's like, it's a trap. It's, well, do you go gamble your money away, or do you save it and squander it and hope for the best? Or do you invest in yourself and build something like a company? And then that's hard and has a huge upfront cost and all these expenses. It's right. Like, we're putting ourselves in a position that's very precarious, and it's not going to be, you know, delightful when it all kind of implodes, and inflation is just happening so fast on so many different levels, and insurance, natural disasters, yeah. all that, like 15 to 25% increase this year. Holy shit.
Well, you know, like I said earlier, like, and you know this about me, I really love history.
Oh, absolutely.
If you study history, and it's not hard, just look at this one little thing. Search how many societies, or how many how much of the money supply that's been fiat, like if you have a fiat currency, mm-hmm. look up one that's ever lasted the test of time. None of them have. Yeah. They all, it's just an inevitable thing that will happen at some point. And when it does, people suffer for it. The system breaks apart, mm-hmm. and then you have to go back to some sort of semblance of honest money. Like that's why gold and silver have been a means of exchange for 5,000 years.
Right. And I think we're starting to see that the silver prices are going through the roof. My brother's a coin nerd. So
yeah,
it was like $42 an ounce. And I was buying ounces for $17 less than a year ago. And so we're starting to see that. And it's also used in manufacturing and all this other stuff. So it is truly a valuable currency.
Yeah. And you know, it's a commodity because the government cannot print it. In order to get more, it takes a lot of effort, mm-hmm. and potentially you might not get anything out of it too, right. You know? So if you actually look at the way societies have, you know, gone through history, mm-hmm. you know, it starts with like barter, how humans coexist with each other. It's like through barter, mm-hmm. but barter can't take you very far, because if I grow grapes and you sell shoes, mm-hmm. and somebody else sells eggs, you know, we have to find the person who wants to exchange me for my exact good. Mm-hmm. But if you have a little device, a little technology called money that everybody accepts,
right.
then it allows everybody to coexist mm-hmm. more with each other. And then when you factor in like the division of labor, where, you know, you can go from a society that has blacksmiths in their family or mm-hmm. bakers and all this stuff, and you can have going from that to a division of labor where there's a lot of different hands that go into making one product, a ton of different people have jobs
or ingredients.
Yeah, ingredients, all these different things.
Yeah.
That is what our, you know, that is how progress is made.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute the government starts regulating everything, especially your money,
yeah.
right? It always goes astray. Mm-hmm. And we are unfortunately seeing that right now. And I wish, you know, it's hard though. I understand that people have to work. I'm just a nerd. And thank God, like I am an artist for a living and I get to do artwork. And while I do artwork, I just consume a ton of audiobooks on economics and history because, you know, I don't want to repeat mistakes from the past.
Absolutely.
And we continue to do that as societies, you know, and it's going to unfortunately
far too often.
Probably continue to happen, you know?
I know. It's so tragic. And you know, talking about resources and talking about gold and whatnot, it's interesting how the market rebounds or how long it takes. So, you know, when I was, my first business venture I was starting up or trying to start up was aquaponics. And, you know, one of the interesting things about that is the water conservation. But beyond that, it's keeping the nutrients in a closed loop. So like phosphorus is one of the most, like least abundant resources we have that we use as a fertilizer. And you have things like copper. Copper is now, like, it's so widely used and there's been so much copper used. Yes, it's recyclable, but there's not manufacturing at a rate where we can't keep up with copper. Mm. Same thing with silver, same thing with gold. And it's like, and it just takes forever to rebound. Like copper prices haven't seen that. So we're starting to see it, right? And starting to become more on demand. But like just things that we use in abundance that don't have the value because it seems like it has to have like the influence, or it has to be like something shiny or this, that, and the other to put that value on it. But you know, there's a lot of stuff that we utilize on a daily basis that is very finite.
And everything you're talking about is supply and demand. Mm-hmm. But through a true free market capitalist system, mm-hmm. people find solutions to things like this.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why all new houses, well, not all new, you know, some houses they'll put, you know, copper piping into it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them use PECs now.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they use, the market innovates, you know, people mm-hmm. find solutions to things like this. Humans are really, really good at adapting, mm-hmm. you know? And like I said, if we actually live in a system where this is actually promoted and not hindered through, let's just say it, through corruption
mm-hmm.
and through the people that we're voting into office that say that they're for the working man and all this stuff, man, it's a, if you look at the track record, I don't know.
Absolutely. So you're just a little pivot here, but you got the slow pokes on. If nobody knows what that is, slow pokes, one of the first car groups in all of the US, and it started here in Peoria, but it's also got the Riverfront Museum. And I was there for the guy who, I'm gonna forget his name. Alan Wall, what was his name? The guy that was gave the information about the Twin Towers being hit to George Bush.
Oh, right. He was just there.
But it was just wild. Like, you know, I was born and around it. It wasn't following politics at the time because I was too young. But just to know that a president was speaking to a group of third graders and just talking and reading a book with them, like, you don't see politicians doing that anymore. You don't see them going above and beyond and being there for their constituents and for the children and for the youth and inspiring them too much. It seems like we all just hide behind a camera, or hide behind a desk, or hide behind the mansion at a gate. You know, it's sad to see that we're not out there more, or golfing. Yeah. we see quite a bit of that with politicians nowadays, which is wild to me. But yeah, you know, we're in such a hard position as a country, and it feels really good at sometimes, but it's just sad to see that we're not taking a more of a not corrupt approach.
Well, humans are easily corrupted. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. I think, you know, that saying, what the heck is it? Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I mean, it really does. And it so does. I think a lot of the people that, especially in higher office, I mean, some people just want to be somebody. They want to mm-hmm. be in power. They want to, you know, have some sort of stature in, you know, in life and show people that they're this person. We need a kind of nobility to step up, like people who are educated, people who are noble in their pursuit of actual change. Mm-hmm. Those type of people are way harder to manipulate because they have a moral compass. That is what we need as a society, is more people like that to step up and run and try to implement real change. Mm-hmm. You know, I do not care at all if I get reelected. This job is a complete sacrifice to me and my family.
You're not doing it for the money, Alex, the fame, the glory.
No, I'll tell you. I mean, we do get paid pretty good on city council, but that's not why.
Yeah, right.
No, seriously. We need people to step up that want to do the right thing and aren't afraid to say what they believe in,
right,
for the fear of some sort of repercussion of not getting voted in, of being unpopular, all this stuff. Like, you know, as much as I love Peoria, I don't make any money here. Like, all my money is made around the country and abroad.
Right.
And so I feel very liberated that I can be who I am, speak my mind, because this job is not my identity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a duty to me to help our city move forward. And like I said, to not be afraid to just tell the truth.
Right. Yeah, it's... I met a lady after Burning Man, and she just got nominated, I think, for the 7th time for Humanitarian of the Year or something like that. She's been on stage with the Dalai Lama. And what she did recently, which is actually coming to light, had to do with Nepal. So Nepal had a very high rate of human trafficking, especially sex trafficking in younger women. And she was able to set up a school and then transport for these young ladies to get to school. And she got the trafficking down to zero. Because she's, you know, one of those people who is not easily corrupted or persuaded.
Yeah.
She proved the corruption from the ground up all the way to the highest level of politics. And it's we're seeing that now. And
that's
we're
inspiring,
seeing
youth.
I know. And it gets me goosebumps just talking about it, but she's so down to earth. Didn't say any of that. The guy that she's partnered with was, you know, talking with her and or talking her up. And like, this is what she's doing. And I was like, I'm sitting beside her having dinner. Like, she's a hero. You know, she's a Burning Man. What the heck? But, you know, it's so inspiring to see that and that little change. And, you know, she's looking for $60,000 right now, and we're going to be donating to the cause. But it's just like $60,000 to get trafficking down to zero and to build another education system to, you know, push that country forward. God, absolutely. You know, take my money. Like, it's something that matters. It's,
yeah,
it's and, true leadership.
And to your point, it's like, it's interesting because I feel like charity in the nonprofit space has become profitable. And so
that's a good point.
It's important for you to know people like that mm-hmm. who actually are about the cause seriously, mm-hmm. and you know that your money is actually being spent for the real deal end goal, not for all this administrative stuff, not to give you a bonus. Like, I mean,
right.
We're living in really crazy times where, unfortunately, you have to do your research about everything now, because I feel like people are constantly being duped out of their money.
Oh, no, it's happened to us quite a bit. I mean, we've donated, you know, luckily, millions of dollars, over maybe $2 million over the last 6 years back to the community. But we have fallen in that trap before and, you know, took a little bit of education or somebody pointing something out. But it's, you know, some of these nonprofits, you know, they only 10% goes back to what the actual cause is, because the rest of it's this big corporate machine that's mm-hmm. trying to run all the marketing, branding, you know, Facebook ads, huge teams, bonuses, this, that, and the other. You're right. A nonprofit can be super profitable for the CEO or even the employees or whatever, because everybody's got to get paid and make a living. Yeah. It's just, you know, just set your salary for whatever you want, especially if you're the only CEO and, you know, raise $1 million, give you $1 million, nonprofit.
I mean, crazy. How crazy is it that Like, did you know the NFL is a nonprofit?
I did not.
What the hell is the NFL? Like, that should tell you everything right there.
$4 billion to buy a team and stuff like that. Like, hell, yeah. Nonprofit,
I mean,
my ass.
It's insane. Anyway, so yeah, I don't know. I'm just an artist, but thank God I have the ability to, I'm a very curious person. I always have been.
Yep.
That's why I've kind of jumped around in my art, and I try to be a craftsman, an all around craftsman. But I'm lucky that I kind of just fell into wanting to learn more and more about the world we live in, how we can actually change it and, implement things for the better. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it's just by looking at the past.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's it, And, we're not really going to reinvent the wheel here when it comes to a lot of what government is, because, you can have a idealistic view of the perfect government. Mm-hmm. But if, these views have been had before, but like we were talking about earlier, power just tends to corrupt.
Absolutely. And you talk about history too. It's interesting. I think ChatGPT is actually helping with that aspect and doing a little bit more deeper research and at your disposal. But, I had a big qualm with the internet as a whole, because I remember back when I was a kid looking something up and actually finding answers and relevant information and data and like references. Now it's like everything's an ad or everything's trying to push you to something else. Like it's hard to look up anything and actually get the real news, or the news has been altered or, adulterated. And it's like, okay, is this true or not? And I think ChatGPT is helping a little bit with that now, but yeah, the internet, it was in a dark, dark place for a while. Just all ads, all everything else right before ChatGPT. It's like, you couldn't get information unless you're reading the books or something along those lines. And it's just, I think having that at our fingertips hopefully will help, if it doesn't paint a negative picture or, also adulterate it. Who knows what's happening with ChatGPT and the rest of them?
Yeah, I hope, like I said before, I'm not against technology. I actually think that the internet is a big reason why people's minds are being liberated, because no doubt you can find some nonsense on the internet, right? Things that are untrue, all this stuff. But kind of like the free market, it feels like people are leaning or are finding something closer to the truth if they're willing to do a little bit of work.
Yeah.
If you're relying on a big organization who is paid by the war industry, by pharmaceutical companies, like if that's where you're getting all of your information, then you have to understand that they're probably going to have some sort of bias.
Oh, absolutely.
There's just no way around it. Mm-hmm. And so I like that we're having something of a, citizen journalism that's coming back, and people are trusting these other individuals rather than what we see on our, what we've been used to in the mass media, the mainstream media, the legacy media, because, there's too many examples, and all we got to do is look back at history as to, these influential places, establishments telling us lies, and so the internet, I think, is overall a good thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like I said, it could, you can go down some really nasty rabbit holes and think some crazy stuff too. But I think in general, hopefully it will be an overall good with technology.
Absolutely. And just thinking about the media aspects, so social media is completely different, but social media, you can get your word out. You can be popular on Twitter. That is very much more of a free market, especially nowadays. But, imagine trying to be a young journalist and having a hope or ambition to start up your own news station or whatever, and try to compete with the legacy media. Like, the barrier to entry so freaking high, like broadcast time, just to even have broadcast time or to be able to do any of that, the labor, everything, like, good Lord, we were already in a hard industry to tap into, but man, I could not imagine trying to get into that.
But now, like what we're doing today, like a podcast, you could, if you have it in you to be consistent and, speak what you want to speak and then grow your audience, then that is powerful right there.
Oh, absolutely.
And people end up, you end up getting genuine people who believe you, who believe in you, because they know that, you are giving them information that you believe is correct.
Right.
And so, and that could be judged too, that could be corrupted as well through sponsors and all that stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. I think we see a lot of that too, but I don't know, like I said, overall, I'm optimistic about where we're going, because I think good always defeats evil,
Yeah.
So sometimes it may not seem that way when you're living through hard times. But most humans are good, So I hope that we can get good humans to step up and, you know, show up to do the right things, especially parents, man. Like, if you're a parent, raise your kids right. So important. It takes time and it's hard.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's a lot of children out there being raised by the internet, and that can, you know, you got to teach them critical thinking before they can just go down and find or access any kind of information they ever wanted. You know, critical thinking is a huge aspect of what they're going to take in and why they're going to take that in and what they're going to do with that information. So very big. So anything good going on in Peoria from the city council standpoint?
I'd say, you know, we're looking at, we've had like this plan to redevelop the whole riverfront, which, you know, our river is awesome. You know?
Stoked on that.
Yeah, that'll be great. But recently we've had, you know, a foundation, the Hanks Foundation is going to come in and they want to give us like an outdoor amphitheater. Mm-hmm. It's an $11 million donation. Seems to be controversial to some, but the city's not going to run it. You know, they're going to come in, they're going to put it in. Some people are concerned where it's going because it's on the river. You know, when you put something in a green space, you're going to get pushback from people who don't want things to be built there, which I know, you know,
solar and farmland.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, so anyway, overall, I think it's good. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it all turns out. It's in the very early stages of it, but you know, there's developments going on all over the downtown area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to be able to support all of them and make it be known that, hey, you know, we need to revitalize our city to make it as safe as possible, to make it a more attractive place for younger people to move to, you know? And I think a lot of that also comes with being adaptable.
Yeah.
One of the most surprising things to me coming in is I've always had the correct idea that government likes to stifle growth. You know, you can't argue against that. It just does, you know, it's an engine to regulate things. Mm-hmm. But I had a small idea about this next thing I'm going to say, but I didn't realize how really powerful it was that citizens themselves don't want change either. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to any thriving city, the economy is very dynamic, you know, like you'll go to a neighborhood and it has a coffee shop in it, you know, it has a bar down the street, like, you know, it's not so regulated. You know, right. I get that people want to have like residential areas and keep them that way. But, you know, young people like to walk, ride their bicycles and stuff like that. So I think if we're a city that's willing to adapt and slowly change towards mm-hmm. allowing things to happen, then, you know, the sky's the limit for Peoria. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a beautiful, awesome, historic city. But we do have the ability here to meet the needs of the, you know, the people that are going to go up and hopefully live here and have jobs here. And that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to run too, is like, you know, I see my kids getting older and I want them to stay here. You know, I love Peoria and I want them to love Peoria and I want them to have opportunity to work and live here, you know?
Absolutely.
So no, the city, I think, it's on the up and up, man. It's a beautiful city. I know you love it. You've made mm-hmm. a crazy investment here, and all the, you know, the donations and everything that you've done for our community. I mean, I hope that doesn't go unrecognized, because, you know, it's huge. It's a big. It's really admirable, and we need more people like you that are truly invested and want to see positive change in our city.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had a few people believe in me when I was young and like to pass it forward to the youth. A lot of the investments we make are for the youth or underprivileged and underserved. And, you know, it's just about the community. You know, it only takes one person to make a huge change. Yeah. One lady, I'm obviously probably had a team to help her build and stuff, but, you know, her idea sparked the end of human trafficking in Nepal, at least to, you know, the highest degree. And that's such an admirable thing. And it just takes one kid that somebody believed in or supported.
And that's why leadership is so important, to have, you know, like that individual is a leader mm-hmm. that had a vision and that had enough, you know, enough in her to see it through and to work hard. You know, it's just like starting a business. You know, if you believe in something enough, you know, failure is not really an option. You adapt.
I'm too damn hard-headed to quit.
Yeah. It's just like being an entrepreneur. You know, you're an entrepreneur. So am I. I run my own art business. And there's a reason why most people don't make it because it's very hard.
Yeah. Blood, sweat, and tears, underpaid, under everything.
But, and especially at first, you know, you go through a lot of trials and tribulations at first. And that's why I like to mentor young people. It's like, you absolutely. Know, you have to, have a spirit of, living in the moment, but thinking long term, mm-hmm. And really doing, being responsible and doing what's right for the rest of your life and potentially right. for the family that you create too,
Yeah, man. No, this has been an awesome conversation. So if you ever want to get a hold of a politician, his phone number is 309. Just messing with you. But I don't know if you want to plug your social media or anything like that for art or sure. I know you're talking about doing a podcast yourself here in the near future.
Yeah. So I'll plug a couple things. So my website is just oldschoolalex.com. I have been a working artist for about 12, 13 years now. And I am going to start a podcast as well. Like I said, I didn't really intend to go into politics at all. Mm-hmm. I feel like I know that I'm doing it for the right reasons. And so I will be starting a podcast very, very soon. It'll actually be me and my wife, Chelsea, oh, yeah. and how, people really enjoy our conversations because, we're just different people and we say what we believe in and we really work well together. So we're going to start a podcast. Part of it is actually going to be a little bit about kind of just life, and parenting and stuff like that. But the majority of it is actually going to be, what happens at city council for the people who, let's get serious. Council meetings are boring. I understand why people don't go. I get it. But especially when there's like a controversial vote or whatever, I'm going to explain to you exactly why in detail that I voted the way I did. Like I'm an open book and I want people, because everything that I vote on, I have a very, very sound understanding of, like I said earlier, the repercussions of taxation and all mm-hmm. these things that we continue to do. So anyway, I just want to have more of a voice to explain exactly how I see things, and you can agree with me, disagree, but it's all about conversations, And I mm-hmm. think this, what you're doing now, we're talking about ideas. And I think the world is ran by ideas, whether good or bad. And I think we need to help sift out the bad ideas through bringing receipts to conversations, talking absolutely. About history, So look out for that. It'll be called the Peoria Over Party podcast.
Ooh.
Because I'm not a partisan, people might want to put me in a corner, but I'm not. I'm for Peoria. I'm for every person in this country and really for, just moving forward as humans. And anyway, more to come on that. But oldschoolalex.com. Also, you can go to my Instagram page. It's the real old school Alex.
Yeah, you're the one that told me that city council, knowing a lot of city councilmen and ladies, I was like, oh, it's nonpartisan? That's wild. I was like, I didn't see that coming. Imagine if everybody did that. Imagine if everybody had a podcast and really said what they were thinking and rationalized their decision for the public. That would be amazing. Then you all could listen to each other's podcasts and then get along better, blah, blah, blah.
I think that's good.
Nice world.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, man, I appreciate what you're doing for Peoria and coming on the podcast. And yeah, this is all we have today. And we could probably talk for hours because we do on several different occasions. But, that's enough for the listeners and hope you enjoyed. And again, there are people out there critically thinking and really trying to work on this community that we love and serve so much. So I hope everyone has a wonderful day.
Thanks a lot, Will. Mm-hmm.